right, we are live with another special episode. We're getting into some classic car racing, huh?
Dude, we need to find some different words other than special.
No, that's like our Ben is special. We're all special.
He is. But...
You guys.
I think if it's like super special, you know, maybe we'll gonna use that. Ben, you're just special. I don't know. Maybe
I'll take that as a superlative, you know.
it's hard to know, right? Like, I don't know. I might think it's a special podcast, and Ben, this blows us away and turns into a super special one. We don't know. You know, we never know.
You know, no pressure, right?
Ben, I appreciate you being on here. We chatted a little bit over Instagram, and I believe you said, "Hey, if you want to talk about some racing, let me know." And I said, "Of course we do."
No, it's so, I've listened to a few other podcasts. You guys have had some other vintage racing minis through the years. So I figured, you know, we're a relatively small group in the U.S. Certainly, I figured let's see if you wanted any more. I didn't know if you were bored of it yet. You know, maybe go back to the road cars for a bit. But
no, never. How can you get bored of racing?
Never.
Yeah, it's an addiction, an affliction. You know, it's a lifestyle, as they say.
It's still like elusive to me. It's like, you know, I've talked to several people that race their minis, and it's still like unobtainium to me for some reason. I'm still trying to figure out how to get into it. So I'm always down to talk about racing. Before we kind of get down that rabbit hole. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. No, I said if I can do it, you know, anyone can do it. So happy to show you how I kind of slid into it backwards, so to speak.
Let's talk about that. Before we jump into it, I always like to plug, go check out Ben's Instagram. You can kind of follow along, look at some of his racing and some other things we'll talk about too. Mid-Century Motoring on Instagram. He's got some sweet pics of not only minis, but some other cool classic vintage cars that I guess you race as well. So we'll talk about and we got some Morton Street Partners. We'll talk about that if you want to, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, of course. Absolutely. It's all interconnected, you know. Cars are cars, right? So
Absolutely. So tell me, have you always been into minis, or did you just kind of stumble upon it? How did this kind of happen?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I definitely had the Matchbox cars as the kid, you know, as a kid does. And for a while I was thinking of maybe buying a sort of modern BMW Mini, as a daily, and it just, for whatever reason, it never quite happened. Funnily enough, I ended up with a Fiat 500 of Bart for many years. I put almost 200,000 miles on it. I won't hear a word against those cars. Street parked it in Manhattan for 7 years. It was an absolute, champion. But, the classic Minis came to me in kind of a roundabout way. My sort of first love with classic cars are old Alphas. And through old Alfa Romeos, naturally, I met a lot of Alfa mechanics. And there's one in particular here in the New York City area, Dominic's up in White Plains. Frank and Santo are good friends. And Santo was the one who got me into vintage racing. And in his basement was a very ratty Mark III Mini, as he put it, with a pretty sweet engine. And he's like, if you've got $7,000 and you don't mind that it's a bit rusty, this would be an interesting car to kind of take to the track. So that was my first official Mini ownership moment. And that car has spawned a whole bunch since. But that's where it all began for me.
So did you pick up this ratty Mark III and did this guy show you how to start racing, or did you kind of daily drive that thing? What was the story behind that?
So I had been a track day boy.
Because you had already been tracking Alphas.
I had a car in progress, which I should admit, even 6 years on, is still in progress. A 58 Giulietta, but I was, you know, this is how these things go. I was going to race it, and then I got the bill from the paint and body shop guys, and I was like, oh, I don't know if I should race this anymore. You know, we have a big contingent here in the Northeast. I mostly run with a club called BSCCA, which is a neat sort of vintage racing league. It still has a pre-war contingent, which is very rare. And, you know, it's sort of based at Lime Rock, and it's kind of the, you know, it's a little more stuffy and stodgy than other clubs. They really frown on post-war cars running anything except Dunlops, and they don't like flares, and they want things to be very sort of correct. And so I was
Sounds
really
like
testing their patience. It's very, well, without the FIA, it has a bit of that kind of flavor.
They won't
so
like
I was really
podcast,
testing their patience,
then.
You know. They won't listen. They didn't want minis in the club for years. I finally
That's
paved
surprising.
The way. But
what? Why?
You know. Originally, it was meant for, you know, cars that were sort of special and notable. You know, we had a Bugatti racing contingent in the club for years.
Super period correct people, huh?
But they were. But, you know, times change. Attitudes change. Right. So, yeah, I had come from the track day world. I had a Lotus Elise for years and did – that's how I learned how to drive, basically. And then I got my vintage license. And I needed something sort of immediately if I wanted to do any vintage racing, because this Alpha was just taking forever. So I bought this really crusty. It was a 73 Mark III. And this car was hilarious. The more I dug into it, the more I laughed, because, like, it, I think, was born a Clubman, but at some point it had a sort of normal fascia welded onto it badly. And then it had a incredibly janky rear subframe delete. Allegedly, this car was used in rallycross in the UK. And so it was rough. But in the back, someone had made these, like, homemade brackets. And instead of having it tied across the entire sort of back of the floor, they were completely separate. And so they would move ever so slightly on their own, which made it a total handful. And I love a loose car. It's kind of, it suits my driving style. Most everyone else who drove that was like, this is a death trap. You are insane. so, you know, that was the kind of the flavor of this car. And it was just a joy to race it. It had a punched out, a 1380, had a huge Weber on it. I was running sticky Yokos, which the club hated. And every time I would get off the track, I'd have to vacuum the rust out of the floor pan because the car was just twisting itself to bits. So anyway, I did that for a few years. And then around 2019, I said, I can and I should do better. I think this car's had it. I had a little bump with it, and the entire front left fender turned out to be fiberglass and Bondo and nothing. So, like, it just sort of collapsed from a little track bump. And I'm like, you know, I fixed it. And then I said, I think it's time to build the car I want. And you can see some of this on my Instagram. But basically, the car I wanted was a sort of Swift Tune style Goodwood FIA Mark I Mini. And you don't see a lot of that in the States. Everyone's running flares. Everyone's running Hoosiers. Yeah. So I said, look, it's not going to be the most competitive one out there, but it's going to be the coolest one if I have my way and I do it right. And you know, I'm not in it to win it. Vintage racing for me it's in my industry. I work in the classic car world. It's like golf. You know, I meet clients there. It's a good time, good day out. I don't have to come in first. So that was sort of the theme. And we can get, it's a long story on how this car came together, but that's basically the intro into my mini racing, just having minis in my life.
I want to get into it because you're right. And I never really kind of thought about it until you just mentioned it. You don't see that kind of style here very often, especially racing. I guess a lot of the guys do have, even if it is a flare, it's not, you know, it's a smaller group two or whatever, but you know, they do have wider wheels on it. Tell us about this. However you want to structure it, what car is this? What'd you start out with? What you've done to it? Kind of how you got into this. It's a beautiful car.
So a little bit of context here too. I mean, what we're really talking about spec wise is the difference between the US vintage racing scene, which is largely, you know, there's reciprocity between these clubs, but it's relatively unregulated. And then overseas, obviously, you have FIA, you have APK, you know, you have et cetera. So I own a car in the UK. I have a Lotus Elite that is a full FIA spec car. And
wow.
Having just recently renewed its HTP, its passport. I can tell you it is the most incredibly bureaucratic system, but it leads to really cool racing. Everyone's on slidey Dunlops. You know, yeah. The cars have to be, I mean, people cheat like crazy. They spend endless money. You know, they hire ex Formula One engineers, you know, to make their whatever go faster, but it's really cool. And so I did not build an FIA Mini. Hand on heart, this is not a car that ever will be eligible. I'm too cheap and I'm a little too janky, you know, but it looks the part. You know, you could sort of glance at it and say, oh, that's, you know, that's a Goodwood car. So that was kind of the idea. Basically what I needed, excuse me, I had a really good drivetrain. So this janky original car that I owned had this punched out 1275. I'd had some head work done to it. You know, it was quick and it was still healthy, and I didn't really have a budget to build a fresh race engine. So I said, what I'm going to do, famous last words, is I'm going to find an easy, good Mark I shell, and I'm just going to mate them. And that'll be V1 of the new car. And it'll take me like 2 months. It took me 3 years and a pandemic.
Sean.
Yeah. All right. Thanks.
You know, it cost way more than I thought it would, but functionally that's what I ended up doing. I went on the hunt 2019. I was looking for a Mark I. I found this shell in Rhode Island. There's a fellow over there who has an incredible hoard of minis, and he had come across this car in Connecticut, I think he said. And it was basically an old SCCA racer. So it had a fiberglass flip front, and it had huge flares on it and massive slicks. But the rest of the car was like a really nice kind of solid Mark I shell. And I said, this is perfect. Bought it for $5,000, you know, ordered some heritage panels, tacked the front end back on it. And then I just had kind of a blank canvas. So from there, I said, all right, we're going to go full Cooper S sort of 64-ish spec. So it's a fully trimmed car. It has bumpers, overriders, the side trim, you know, you name it. Just again, like the FIA cars, they're required to have all the fixins. And it's just, none of this stuff weighs very much. It's not a huge like performance penalty to have bumpers on these cars. And it looks cool, you know?
Yeah.
So I did all of that. And then we got into the drivetrain, and it was like, well, should probably do a little more work on that too. And I wanted to switch to SUs so I could have a stock dash. And then I wanted bigger SUs, and then I went bigger again. Now we're 1¾ inches. They're basically E-type carbs on it.
Jeez, that must be huge in the bay.
Which is, we're squeezing what we can do. Oh, yeah. And they've got velocity stacks that look like salad plates, you know, salad bowls on the but so I got carried away, but you know, it was the pandemic and this was sort of keeping me sane. I was in between jobs at the time, you know, everyone's sort of life was on hold, and I just had this like 9 month period in 2020 to just get into it, which was great. I'll never do it again, but I highly recommend everyone builds one car in their life.
Chase the dream.
Yeah.
I concur.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, it looks amazing. And like you said, it fits the bill for sure. So you finished it recently, or?
I did. 2023 was its first full season.
Okay.
And it did, I mean, the car was an absolute champion. I built it with my friend Stephen Dibden. He's my tame British expat. He also owns a really interesting company called Additive Restoration. So he sort of 3D prints and prototypes unobtainium car parts. And he does some really exciting work, you know, vintage Ferraris. He did a taillight lens for a Pegaso, which is definitely worth a Google if you like your sort of Pebble Beach style cars. And we happen to have warehouses adjacent to each other. So I basically told him, he's very handy. I said, in 2020, if you help me build this, you can co-drive it. And we've had a blast putting this car together. And then when it was together, it had to do double duty at the track. We were hot seating this thing weekend after weekend. I think we did 7 weekends with it in 2023. And you know what? I don't think we missed a single session. That car was just a rock. So, you know.
Wow.
Proof in the pudding, isn't it?
I want to get into a little bit of vintage racing, and I know you know, I've had Graham Reed on, and I've had Don Racine and Cole Leggett, who races kind of over in Denver, to kind of get into it. And I'm not, you know, I think West Coast, like, you, there's different, what are they, federations, I don't know, what are they called? I'm drawing a blank on that.
Different clubs, yeah. You know.
Clubs, et cetera, yeah, exactly. So who are you specifically racing against them? What kind of class are you in, and what does that look like?
So my home club, just kind of the politics as I understand it, all of the U.S. Vintage clubs are under the VMC, the Vintage Motorsport Council, which is, you know, I don't know much about them, to be honest. I generally am with the SCC. I do occasionally, we run with VRG as well. There are certain events where both clubs are sort of involved. If you go to Lime Rock Historics, this past year I was in the sort of the tin top class, which was mostly VRG BMWs. It's kind of a strange place for a 60s mini, but I had a great time fighting for 15th place, so it was cool. but yeah, you know, the thing with our club, we have a really robust sort of under 2 liter group of post-war, and by post-war I mean like late 50s, early 60s stuff. There's a big core contingent of Alfa Giulietta's, like 15 to 20 of them in the club active. And then there's a smattering of British stuff and some Porsches, some early 912s, some 356s. We're all running relatively skinny tires. You know, the cars are prepped in a way that's, you know, some people spend more on engines than others, but, you know, the sort of ethos here is that the cars should be relatively period correct. And it's good, tight racing. We have a lot of fun with this group. So it's basically what this car was built to do. I'm potentially going to send the Mini out west this year. Maybe for Monterey, maybe for Velocity, although I may have a scheduling conflict with that. And, you know, it's going to be fighting with one hand tied behind its back. You know, I won't have the grip, but we'll have fun. And again, fighting for last place, every bit as fun as fighting for first. I believe it. So,
could you ever enter in the Minis versus Mustangs, or would you have to change too much to the car to actually do that?
That's the Velocity race.
Oh, is it? Oh, okay.
I think it's eligible as it stands. I admittedly, I've submitted both apps. I haven't heard from either yet. I think they're still putting classes together. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It depends also how the Mustangs are prepped. You know, in a perfect world, if the cars were all running on, say, Dunlops, you know, you get that really good close racing, because the Mustangs in particular have no grip and they're just a mess in the corners on Dunlops. But if they're running, you know, on Hoosiers as well, or if they're running something else, I don't know. I mean, they might just be fast everywhere, in which case it will be a Mustang race and a Mini race happening at the same time. So we'll see.
Yeah, because I think I saw the Velocity race and the Mini Can-Am that's in Tulsa, I believe. I think they're actually on the same weekend, unfortunately.
Ah, well, only so many weekends in the season, right, you know?
Yep. Yeah, that's cool. So, Lime Rock, isn't that quite a big track? Like, how does the Mini react on that?
So, Lime Rock it's actually quite a short track. It's only a mile and a half. And the joke is you turn right, except for the one time you turn left. But it's also, it has like a sort of Goodwood flow to it. It's an incredibly historic and beautiful place. And it's surprisingly nuanced. There's a lot of elevation. There's some kind of hidden depths to it and some tricks. What we find is that, you know, we're blessed in the Northeast with a lot of tracks, more than people realize. And a Mini loves a longer technical track. You know, you can take it to wherever. If it doesn't have a huge straightaway, you're going to have a great time. But Lime Rock is sort of, you know, people call it the bull ring. It's really set up well for wheel-to-wheel racing. You can get, you know, three abreast in that big bend, as they call it, the sort of 180-degree first complex there. You have these incredible sort of flowing sections that in a mini, you know, you're lifting, you're not even braking, you know, you're doing a whole bunch of balls to the wall driving.
Right.
Famously, Lime Rock has the downhill, which is that last corner. It's a sort of terrifying thing. You're just staring at a wall and you have to like sort of lift your eyes off of it and just trust that gravity will bring you through it. And that you do that flat in a mini, which is, you know, it feels absurd. It never quite feels right, but it's a really, really advantageous moment. You know, you get some good work done in the downhill of that car. So I love Lime Rock, you know, they can bury me there when I'm done. It's it's a good place to be.
Yeah. I think I was thinking of another track, but, I try to follow some, you know, racing, not necessarily vintage racing, just because like you said, the East Coast kind of has a lot of tracks that maybe aren't well known. And they all look so beautiful. Just amazing. Kind of like you said, some elevation changes, just the surrounding areas, like the tracks over here in Southern California is like in the middle of the desert.
which is cool as well. And I've yet to drive Buttonwillow or Willow Springs, right? I mean,
yeah.
They all look gorgeous, you know. And it's fun. I think it's variety for me. You know, I see a lot of northeastern tracks and, you know, they're different, but they're all kind of the same, you know. So it would be cool to try that too.
Yeah, it makes sense. But, makes sense.
Yeah.
So are you racing anything else besides the Mini? I know that you said you have your Giulietta. Is that going to be kind of a separate thing, same season? How does that work?
You know, I will eventually, I've been saying this for a while, I will eventually get around to finishing that car. I think that car is probably going to be a little more of a fast road spec. They have a sort of non-competition group with the SCCA called Preservation, and it just allows you to do some lapping in a street car or a more mildly prepped X-race car. And so, you know, maybe I'll do that with it. I currently have 2.5 active racing cars, which is 2.5 too many. It's disastrous. So there's the Mini, which is sort of the main car here. I co-own a 59 Austin Healey Sprite as well.
The gold one, isn't it?
Which is a very silly car. It's waiting on an engine. You know, that's a lot of fun too. And I share that with people. You know, we let people take that and get their license in it. Friends who need a car, you know, it's kind of, it's not precious. But you know, she rips. She's a good one. And then I have this Lotus overseas, which is a new thing. I really wanted to run a bunch of different events in Europe and in the UK. That car is dual purpose. It has a road registration, which is a cool kind of, you know, FIA quirk. So like I'll be taking it. It got into Toronto for April, which is very exciting. And we've got a really, really cool sort of program for this year for that car. So I'm just going to be bouncing around doing whatever I can fit in, you know, whatever's running on any given day, I'm driving it. So
love that. Love that attitude.
Amazing. Yeah. See, that's what I'm saying. I want to get to that point. See, I'm jealous. I want 2.5 race cars.
Well,
I guess I kind of, you know, if I really think about it. Yeah. So if I really think about it, I have like 1.5 in the garage, you know, technically.
Well, so you're almost there, really.
Almost there. I just need one more. I
almost.
Think.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a Mark I Austin Cooper S that apparently raced in Southern California its whole life. And it, you know, had some like plexiglass windows and came with Dunlop race slicks and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm,
Weber cutouts and stuff like that. I just can't find any history on it, which would be really cool, but so maybe that'll be its bring it back to its former glory, and maybe I'll be racing you one day.
We love to see it, and I think you know, it's a, as I always joke, if you can't find history on something, it's, you know, up to you to make it, right? Make that history happen. This car, I have absolutely no knowledge of its past. I don't think it was a Cooper, although it was allegedly discovered with a 1071 engine outside of it. So correlation, causation, there's no VIN number. You know, I think there's evidence of a wet suspension, but I'm admittedly no expert on that. So
yeah,
I have no idea. But I said, you know what? it's got a history now because it's my car, you know, and it's out and about. And in 50 years, they can say, oh, this was the ex-Bentarlo Mini. You know, what a shitty driver, but a great car, you know.
I love
one
that,
for the history
man.
Books.
Oh, man, that's cool. So you have obviously history with vintage cars. Did you do most of the work on the Mini yourself? Did you have to, I know that you said you had a partner helping you out. What all was like needed to be done to it? Obviously
well,
new front you
build.
Mentioned.
Yeah. I don't do body work. I was lucky at the time we lost him to Florida, unfortunately, but I had a very good body guy next door and he'd done other cars for me. So I came to him with the old Cooper brochure and I said, all right, we have six colors or whatever to choose from. And I said, I think it's going to be surf blue, isn't it? And he's like, yeah, it's gotta be surf blue. So, you know, he did the paint. We have a good shop here in Westchester for cages. And so I bought an FIA cage kit, had him weld that in. You know, I've done a little bit of welding, but I definitely wouldn't trust myself to do a safety cage or a roll bar.
Yeah.
So that kind of stuff was, you know, that was done outside of the shop. All of the assembly, the testing, the ongoing maintenance, I like to do in-house. To me, part of the fun of vintage racing is that sort of grassroots element. You know, it's like the car breaks mid-race, you come in, you fix it before the next race. That's like part of the fun of the weekend. So it's been an adjustment. This car in the UK, for example, is with a very good prep shop, and I don't have my hands on it. And that's a new one for me. We'll see how it feels mid-season. It's nice to have the help, but like I just want to like want to get in there, you know. I want to play with it, and you learn a lot about the car, and I do think it makes you a better driver. Certainly for setup, you know, if you're intimately involved in, you know, the old string, you know, aligning it and getting the camber plates out, you really kind of get to know the machine, and I think that also it translates to your sort of on track ability, you know, how comfortable you are with it, you know, that sort of abstract relationship. You can tell when a car clicks with its driver and you can tell when it really doesn't. I've owned both, but this one, we talk the same language. The Mini and I are like, it's when I get out of it, I actually find other cars hard to drive for a session. Like if I'm hot seating between the Austin Healey, I have to rewire my brain. You know, it's rear wheel drive. It's just different. And I didn't build it, so we don't get along in the same way, you know?
Yeah, I love that. I mean, even though I don't race, building my own car and pretty much have touched, you know, 99% of the bolts on that car, you have this connection with it, even though it's still pissing me off and breaking and stuff like that. You still have this connection with it, and you know the little idiosyncrasies of it, of the gearbox, of how it, you know, turns in, you know, what upsets it, etc. So I can imagine, like you said, the Lotus is it might be a great setup car, but you have to learn that process much faster versus the Mini. You kind of already know it right off the bat. So I see that. That's cool, and I always kind of recommend people try to mess with their cars. Minis are very simple, obviously. Like it might be a little tight, but it brings you that much closer to it, right, Sean?
Yeah, it's mechanical sympathy as well.
I've been ragging on Sean because I was like, come on, we can figure this. It's super, like, we got a Haynes manual, we'll figure it out. It's
easy. The problem is, though, is I've already restored the car once, and it's just all of a sudden it's supposed to be a quick little freshen up, and I'm back to restoring, going back down to a bare shell again, and it's driving me up the wall. There's no such thing as a quick freshen up. Thanks.
2 months to 3 years,
it's always,
right, Ben?
Always that way.
It is. It really is. And that list will always constantly grow as well. Like with the racing, there will always be new and updated parts which are slightly stronger or slightly lighter. So it will never end. It's hard to draw that line as to where to end it.
And I'm always fascinated.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I glitched a little bit there. I was kind of. I saw you start to move and then I stopped and you started.
No, you're fine. Go ahead.
You get into a cadence with a race car, you know, barring a big crash or barring like a catastrophic engine event, let's say. you know, you get into a cadence of kind of, you know, the old spanner checks and like just the general servicing that it takes for a much more punishing environment, you know, especially with the Mini, we're obsessed with oil, and, you know, having that shared gearbox, sump situation is not great for racing. You know, I change the oil in that car basically every event, maybe two events. Wow. And you know, you can tell like it needs it. So, you know, I think that, there's both that and then upgrades. Although with these cars, if you kind of spec it the way you want first time through, like I've got a pretty short list now of things that I want to keep tweaking, you know, and yeah, I guess they, you know, CAD or someone could come out with a cool, new thing, like a must have thing, you know, and I'd probably buy it and slap it on. But I think at this point it's pretty dialed, you know, like it's where I want it to be. And it's just a question of keeping it all together, keeping it out of the barriers. That's a good one. You know.
Yeah, for sure. I'm always kind of interested in, and it's either kind of the racer's secret or it's really not that difficult when it comes to minis, but like the setup of when you're racing the car, right? Like, are you, for somebody like you, you're kind of looking for that period kind of look. Are you on cones? Are you on high lows? Are you on the standard kind of, hey, let's put the adjustable camber arms and the camber plates in the back? Or are you doing some fancy aluminum rear arms like CAD makes or MED or whoever makes those, you know? What is kind of your setup?
So the spec is, again, externally the car looks very FIA.
Right.
Internally, the way that the guys work within the FIA is everything is 10 times harder and more expensive because the obvious solutions are illegal. You can't run high lows, right, on an FIA Mini. So, you know, they're going to great effort to get the ride height just right by chopping the trumpets and, you know, machining special things. So we don't have any of that. And I am all about upgraded parts, adjustability, ease of use, ease of build. So the car has we'll start from the basics. The front subframe has been seam welded and gusseted. And that's mostly a rally Mini thing. It's not a terrible idea on a track, especially because if you're running a really stiff suspension, you hit a curb. It's nice to have, you know, that extra kind of strength. So we did that. We're running cones and high lows. They're yellow dot in the front and then red dot in the back seems to be a little bit, you know, we've tried a few different mixes, but having a little extra give in the damping, so to speak, is kind of nice in the rear. Then we've got sort of Cooper S, the AP front brakes, single piston, running 10-inch wheels, the sort of rose pedal wheels you'd see at Goodwood. We are allowed to spacer them, which they are not. And you really, especially in the rear, if you're not running flares, you need all the space you can get because they're going to rub. You know, even the Dunlops, which are a narrow tire, you're playing with a very fine margin. So we did that. All of the suspension stuff's adjustable, tie rods, lower arms, etc. The rear, we did buy the fancy lightweight CAD radius arms because I couldn't help myself.
Nice.
It was Christmas time, and I said, this is my Christmas gift to me.
There we go.
And we do the CAD adjustable rear camber, the plate as well, which is a really trick system. And you know, if you spend a lot of time on track in a Mini, setup is everything, but you really feel that rear and it's fun to play with that. We run stock drums in the rear. I do have a bias valve. We're playing with the brake system as we speak. It's currently on a yellow tag dual master, which is fine, but I'm probably going to go with something like Tilton. You know, it's a little bit higher quality. I want a little bit of a harder pedal. So, you know, that's basically the landscape of it. I'm trying to think what else we run. We do...
like any sway bars or anything like that?
We do the CAD rear anti-roll bar. I've got that kind of on the middle setting. Again, FIA cars, it's a single setting. They're allowed, so they have to do some really crazy engineering to adjust. It's nice just to have the CAD one, three settings, you know. And I think, what else did we do? That's basically it. I mean, that gives you an adjustable, sort of serviceable car. I can replace these parts. I can have spares. Everything's on Mini spares. You know, I keep a big Pelican box of it. So, yeah, it works. Yeah, it works for us.
Seems like that's kind of the recipe, right? Like, with a Mini, if you get all adjustable stuff, it's so easy to tweak all of that on the fly. So if, you know, take a lap or hot lap or whatever and come back like, hey, I need the rear stiffened up or whatever it is, you know, that it seems like the recipe. Whereas other cars, there's so much involved in the suspension setup that it's like, whoa. The simplicity of the Mini suspension is kind of its saving grace, I guess, and why it makes it such a good race car, I guess.
Absolutely.
For what it is.
Absolutely.
For what it is.
for a tiny box on tiny wheels, it kills. Exactly. It's great.
That's cool. Well, awesome. I look forward to seeing more of the racing now that we're following each other. So start posting more of that. I'd like to see that.
we'll do some Mini stuff. I think that car is going to be probably first event will be Lime Rock in May. I'm still figuring out how the schedule goes together, but you know, I'd like to get at least 4 or 5 weekends in with that car this year. Hopefully it gets up to Laguna. So keep an eye on that. You know, we'll see if they'll have me and if I can get the logistics, you know.
That'd be so good taking that down the corkscrew.
I'm very excited to do it.
Let's make it work. We'll make it work. Yeah. I'll weasel you in somehow. I'll figure it out. like I have a lot of pull.
call your congressman, you know. Let's make it happen. that would be a lot of fun. And, you know, it's always... We're probably on borrowed time with this engine. So, you know, it's kind of like we're at that point where we're just going to send it till it doesn't let us send it anymore, you know? and then we'll figure out what version 2 looks like, which, you know, I have some ideas. It's always a question of time and budget, but, you know, they're allegedly overseas now. Some of those Swift Tune engines are doing north of 150 horsepower. That's the word on the street. Out of 1293, not even out of 13 something. So, you know, there's some goodies. There's some goodies we could put in this thing.
Yeah, those Swift Tune engines, man. And you can pretty much kind of buy like a kit from them. I forget what they call it, like, right? The Heritage engine
Rocket, the Road Rocket. Yeah.
They have a bunch of different options and you can kind of customize it. They basically, it's just like, that's pretty incredible. I don't know if those are the ones putting out that power, but I'm sure they're very capable of.
No, I think that's, again, it's their sort of bespoke race engines that they're doing for the FIA cars. I mean, they're driving them to 9K, you know?
Yeah.
Nears makes no difference. And that's great if you've got the budget to rebuild, you know, every so many hours. That's a stressed engine. You know, I take mine right now to, like, I'm feeling, you know, cheeky, maybe seven grand. And, like, that feels like, you know, I'm diluting its remaining lifespan. So there's a lot you can do. And, you know, I've never fully built a Mini engine. We do a lot of, you know, for this one, we've done a lot of head work, but it'll be kind of a fun process to really break it down and say, okay, you know, it's not going to be the full Swift Tune deal, but like, if I want a 7,500 RPM or maybe even 8,000 special occasion engine, like, you know, what does that spec look like? There's a lot of really cool products to help you along that route. So
definitely, my uncle has a shop here in California, and they do a bunch of vintage racing engines and things like that. And they just built an A series for a gentleman. I think it ended up being like a 1460, and they did some kind of cool little trick. Fuel injection and things like that, and I think it just dynoed on like 135, something like that.
Jeez.
Which is pretty crazy, but yeah, it that's always my thing, is like, hey, why are you trying to switch to a Honda engine when you can dump a bunch of money into the A series and get the same horsepower?
It's just an old iron lump, you know. You do what you do. It's very cool. And I think, like everyone with these cars, yes, we all know this isn't, you know, the latest technology by any stretch, but, you know, there's something endearing about the way these engines sound, just the kind of the simplicity of them. You know, I think I've got head removal down to about a 30-minute process with these cars. Like, I could do it at the track. That's kind of cool, you know? Like, there's not a lot of cars out there. Certainly for someone like me who's not really a proper mechanic. You know, I'm just an idiot with some cheap tools. You know, like, it's very accessible, and it's maybe one step up from a lawnmower, but way better than a lawnmower. So, you know.
I don't know if I agree or am offended. I don't know, but.
I mean, you know, there's also the British stuff.
It's true, though.
Like, with this new Lotus, that's a Coventry Climax. That was originally designed as a water pump. You know, it was the old fire truck apparatus. And it was such a good design. I mean, it then went on to have this really sort of incredible motorsport career as an engine.
Yeah.
And those are, you know, they're beautifully, like, simple. It's kind of the same ethos, you know. It's a really, really neat thing. So, again, at some point I'm going to get my hands dirty on that, too. I want to see the inside of the Climax, you know.
Yeah. Oh, don't we all?
Don't we?
So, tell me, moving on. So, how did Mid-Century Motoring come about? Is that just is that kind of like your team name, or did it come first and then the racing, or the racing come first and then you named a team? Like, how, tell us a little about that.
It's not really a team name. So the way this came about, I'm 33. And I've been in the classic car business now for about 10 years. And when I was fresh out of college, I did an ill-fated stint at an auction house, not with cars. And I got fired pretty quick. So I went out and, you know, what you sort of learn from auction houses is to be a specialist in something. A lot of these guys have worked as brokers or in private treaty, and they kind of come in and out of the auction space. So I said, well, if I want to work with old cars, I better go work with old cars. And Mid-Century Motoring was originally my sort of little one-man broker dealership. And originally I was bringing stuff in under the 25-year rule and doing sort of container loads of, you know, interesting Euro-spec stuff. A lot of it was Italian. There was some British, the occasional German. And then that business evolved over time into more of a consignment brokerage model. And I was doing less importing. By the time the pandemic hit, I was totally burnt out and sick of it. And I wanted a new challenge. I wanted to do something with other people. I couldn't really scale this particular business into like a partnership. It just didn't work. So mid-pandemic, the opportunity to start Morton Street Partners with some great people came up. We have an art gallery space here in Manhattan. The idea is we've modeled this after an art advisory. So instead of being a car dealership, we work sort of on the client side to build and manage collections. The specialty of the house is sort of unique opportunities. We work with some really, really insane prototype and design study cars. And we kind of just try and bring the car conversation to the art and design space. There's a lot of qualified buyers there, but there's also just this, you know, collectors as a whole have a lot more in common than they do in terms of differences. And so we find that taking an art and design collector's approach to the automobile is both really interesting for current car people. It also brings in a whole new segment of business for us. So that's basically what I've been up to the last few years. Mid-Century Motoring is our in-house dealership. So the entity still sort of survives. It's also my Instagram, my personal Instagram handle. I just kept it. But yeah, it's been a good ride. And, you know, I love cars more than ever. And this day job gives me a good reason. You know, it's all the reason I need to go racing. We do a lot of networking at the track. And, you know, it's been good for business. It's good for my, you know, health and sanity. So I love it.
I'm glad to hear that, because oftentimes you hear people that are into cars as a hobbyist get into the industry and then they don't have time for their own stuff and they kind of fall out of love with it because it's such a job. But you're making this work, and it's really unique. The Morton Street website, mortonstreetpartners.com, is really cool. I'm glad that you kind of explained that, because the homepage just kind of blows you away with like the imagery, the art aspect of it. So that looks like something really interesting and kind of unique. And then, like you said, you're using the kind of mid-century modern as the inventory aspect of it, networking at the track. So it's very cohesive, and I think keeping you sane, mm-hmm. that makes a lot of sense.
No, tell us a little bit. It flows together, yeah.
Yeah, I love that. So tell us a little bit kind of about the art aspect of it. It looks like you have like exhibitions going on. How does that work?
Mm-hmm. So we have this space, and as we joke, the space is a partner too. It really does inform this business. So for those of you who aren't familiar with New York City, the West Village these days is a pretty, it's a pretty tony place. It's a lot of fancy coffee shops, nice little restaurants. But back in the day, it was quite an industrial place. And so this building was one of the earliest service stations in New York City.
Wow.
So it's a big sort of long, narrow garage. In more recent years, it was Cynthia Rowley, fashion designer's headquarters. She built it out kind of like an art gallery. It has the lighting, the white walls. So we had an opportunity mid-pandemic to move in here. A friend of ours in the car space had bought the building. And we said, you know, what would be really neat for an advisory, and art advisories do this too, is instead of, you know, putting stuff that's necessarily for sale on the wall, you know, you can use the space as a marketing tool. You know, you program the space and it just brings people holistically into your orbit. So the first couple of years we did this, we would do a quarterly show roughly, and we'd bring an artist or a museum or a designer or a corporate entity in, and we just were looking for creative ways to bring the automobile into contact with art, design, fashion, you name it. And so we've just kind of gone with that. There was never really a hard and fast plan beyond let's just do this and see what happens. And it's the result, the response has been incredible. And it's especially notable from existing car people who keep telling us, we've just never thought of cars this way. And this is so fresh and it's so different. And then in the back of our heads, we go, great, because we're meeting all of you in a new way. It's like we're meeting you again. Mm-hmm. So it's been good for business. It's been a hugely fun creative challenge. And if you guys are in New York City, you should come by. There's always something going down.
I'm down for coming up for that.
Always.
So everyone go check out Morton Street Partners on Instagram as well, and you'll kind of see what we're talking about. Obviously, their website as well. That building looks so cool. I went to college at Hofstra in Long Island, and I ventured into the city often. My father worked in the city for a very long time, and I love the old architecture in some of the buildings like you're talking about. And I immediately, when I went to that website, I was like, that building's so cool. So collaborating with that and having these, you know, vintage cars in there, that's kind of like a dream, it would seem.
The whole aesthetics of the, you know, the company, the race car, everything, the building, is literally, I think, what all petrolheads aspire to becoming.
Well, it's funny because I still look at us as quite scrappy. You know, we're all roughly the same age in this business. We're kind of the next generation, you know, especially with working with the more blue chip stuff. You know, it's an interesting take. So I still very much feel like I'm new to the table. But you know, yeah, it's, you have more pinch me moments sort of per capita doing this, you know, than I've ever managed otherwise. And I think it's true with things like minis, you know, also watching how sort of guys in our age bracket are interacting with these cars and how that sort of next generation is going to continue to use them and preserve them and, you know, keep them relevant at some level. Yeah. That's really exciting. So I'm happy to be part of these exciting times. You know, that's how I look at it.
Yeah, for sure. I think you're doing a great job of kind of, like you said, bringing in the younger generation, but keeping the old alive. You know, there's got to be some sort of change, and it's not like we're trying to change it for the worse. We're just trying to put your own flair on it, I guess, which we love. So,
absolutely.
Well,
new approaches.
Yeah, absolutely. Everyone go check out Morton Street Partners on Instagram and their website as well. Ben, are you ready for a little Patty probe?
Let's do it.
Let's get couple questions in here. I think I want to go with... Let's go. I think I want to ask this one just based off of racing instead of like a street car. What has been your favorite kind of modification that you did or setup that you've done for your car that really kind of transformed it on the track?
Ooh, I guess there's a few. The most recent one, we put the CAD short shift kit in it. Ooh. Which I just, for whatever reason, had never bothered to do before. And I'm a total convert. That's just, it's a joyous thing. I'd say that overall though, I've always been most interested in messing with carburetors and carburetor spec. That original car I had, I was running a Honkin Weber 45 on a flat manifold, which was super trick. And it just felt so, so good, you know, up high. It was jetted just right. AKA not by me. Someone else did it. You know, I have some Weber whisperers in my circle. So it's been fun. Like, again, as I said, we've had a few different SU iterations on this car, and we keep playing with just the kind of the character of, you know, how it feels in revs. So I would say, yeah, carburetors are probably top of my list for like most impactful thing, you know?
I like that. I like that a lot. Yeah. Such a little change on the carb can make a big difference. Like I just changed the little piston, for the dash pot, and it takes away like the flat spot between shifts. And it's like such a little thing. I like that answer.
Didn't change your needles for the elevation though in the mountains, did you, Mike?
Moving on.
Ooh, amateur mistakes.
That was a oversight on my part. I was running real rich, I'll tell you that.
Better than running lean, as they say.
I've always heard leaner is meaner, baby.
Sure is.
Something like that.
Sure is.
Let's see. Let's kind of change this one up a little bit. I think you might have some good insight on this. We kind of already touched on it, but maybe like a hot take or controversial opinion about minis or the vintage car scene or vintage racing scene that maybe is misunderstood or something like that.
Oh, I have a lot of controversial hot takes, especially on vintage racing. How much time you got? No, I think I really wish people would. I'm a huge proponent of Dunlop Bells. To me, having a slidey, kind of like silly backwards tire is the point. If you put sticky rubber on these cars, you know, we had an issue in our club. All these Giulietta's, they're running not even crazy, crazy slicks. They're running like Avons. That's still so much grippier than the car was designed for. We actually had hubs failing.
Wow.
So Steven, my partner in the Mini, machined an upgraded hub for Giulietta's. If you run them on a Hoosier, it's even more strain and stress, I would assume. I think those are considered slightly stickier. And so, you know, I'm all about, I think the FIA got the tires 100% right. You want the car to be moving, and there's really nothing to be afraid of. I'm a terrible driver, you know, and if I can slither around in the Mini, you know, on Dunlops, like it's good. You know, your lap times will be slower, but the racing is infinitely more fun, and the spectacle's better. And I think that's like the other problem with vintage racing is it's really boring. You know, if it's not Goodwood, right?
You need to have some excitement.
To it. Yeah, so
I like
that's
that,
my though. My hot take at the moment.
That's a good one. That's
many.
A good one.
Yeah.
I like that. I always like to end it on this one. If you could have a drink, beer, coffee, tea, something of those sorts, with one Mini celeb, who would it be?
Ooh. Well, at some point I would love to sit down and pick Nick Swift's brain. He's always very busy. Whenever I'm at Goodwood, you know, it's like we've been introduced maybe twice. And at some point I would just love in a quiet moment to be like, hey, man, many questions, you know?
Yeah. How are you getting that much horsepower?
It's like, can I just like soak your aura in? You know, big fan of what they've done. I think, you know, as I spend more time in the scene over there, and this year in particular, I'll be, you know, I'm a member at Goodwood. I am over there a few times a year anyway, but this year we're doing Silverstone Classic allegedly with this new car and maybe an Enduro at Snederson, which is really exciting. Wow. So, you know, there's a bunch of other mini people over there, you know, both drivers and builders. And some of them I was aware of, some of them I'm not, but I just am continuously meeting like fascinating, super talented mini folk. And that's great. You know, I learn something every time, and I got to start getting, you know, it's hard because the car's not over there, but as a little aside, if you have a race car in particular, especially one that you've built yourself, it is so important to lend it to talented people who can give you feedback on how it's set up. And, you know, I have like a hit list a mile long of people I would love to do some hot laps in my car and tell me what to change, you know, because my sort of, I'm not, you know, I'm not really qualified to say after a certain point.
That's a good hot take right there.
There you go. Another just coming at you.
Just hot coming at you. Right. I love it.
You know?
Ben, really appreciate you taking the time out and chatting with us. It's been awesome. I look forward to keeping up with you and the racing and the Morton Street Partners and kind of looking at that. So if you guys are in the New York City area or even the East Coast, go and check that out because that looks pretty damn cool. Anything else you want the people to know?
Well, I'm sorry for being a bit sniffly. I sound like a 3-pack-a-day smoker. I had a cold 2 weeks ago. It won't leave me.
Sure.
But yeah, I would say if you're here and at Lime Rock this year, come say hi. You know, the car will be there. If you find yourself overseas at Goodwood or elsewhere, car will be there. So, you know, I the best part of this is the people. I'm always down to meet the people. And if you're 100%. Listening to this podcast, you're probably worth meeting. So,
you know, I love that. I love that. Well, thank you for being on again. And everyone go check out Mid-Century Motoring and Morton Street Partners. And I will catch you guys on the next one.
See you later.